Canto 3 begins with perhaps the best known lines from the whole of Dante's Divine Comedy: "Abandon every hope, all you who enter here." It's the words above the gate that's right at the vestibule of hell proper, which Virgil and Dante are now going to enter. But the words are more interesting than just the most famous line. There's quite a lot to them. So here they are in full. It begins actually saying, "I am the way into the doleful city. I am the way into eternal grief. I am the way to a forsaken race." So there's three I ams, and in the Christian world, of course, that immediately recalls the I ams of Jesus in John's Gospel. And it's the I am the way. So there's already something slightly strange about this, because it's saying that there's something about stepping into the vestibule of hell, something about the descent, which actually is part of the way. It's presented at one level, you might say, as this is the way that those who are going to end up in the doleful city, who are going to end up in eternal grief, who are going to end up forsaken, this is the way that they will go. But it's the slight ambiguity, which I'm sort of trying to stress in my understanding of the Divine Comedy. It's not, there's more than meets the eye, as even they when they enter the vestibule of hell. And I think that continues with the next words above the doorway as well. It says, "Justice it was that moved my great creator. Divine omnipotence created me, and highest wisdom joined with primal love." Highest wisdom and primal love, as well as justice. Now, we might expect justice at the gateways to hell, because the sort of common or garden everyday presumed unthinking assumption, certainly in the Christian world, is that hell is there for those who justly deserve it. But then it's added that it's highest wisdom and primal love that made it as well. And again, I think this sets up the suggestion that something else is going on. A thought that comes up for me is that justice in Aristotle, who Dante knew very well because he quotes Dante later on in the Divine Comedy, and in particular quotes the Nicomachean Ethics. Well, in the Nicomachean Ethics of Aristotle, justice is considered to be a failed kind of love. It's what happens when you have to resort to the law to settle your differences rather than being able to draw on relationship and love to work things out. So justice is not an ideal, actually, in this mindset, which it's often thought of in the modern world that way. But justice is a represents a kind of necessary failure. And so I'm wondering whether this, again, to the slightly more subtle reading of this entrance into hell, this is saying this is a necessary failure, which is part and parcel of what it is to be human, but it's a way that leads to something else you don't fully understand right now. It is still strangely a part of the highest wisdom, the wisdom that exceeds human comprehension, and the primal love, the love that holds all things together. So the oddity signal right from the start. And then it moves to, "Before me nothing but eternal things were made, and I shall last eternally, abandon every hope, all you who enter." Now, Dante asked Virgil about this, and the first thought that Virgil gives, again, is the sort of standard medieval understanding, which has a lot in it. It's a very rich understanding, which is that the people who enter hell are the souls who have lost touch with their intellect, is the translation. Now, this is the translation from ultimately the Latin intellectus. Dante, of course, writes in the Italian vernacular, but it would have had the resonance of the Latin intellectus. And it means something rather different from what we mean by intellect now. It's not a kind of dry, logical reason, as intellect tends to mean now. Rather, it's the part of the human soul that can resonate with the divine understanding, that can see and contemplate the deepest, richest side of the created world. And so, what this is saying is that the souls who go through and enter hell are those who have lost touch with the implicit, the subtle, the inner meaning of things, the soulful, spirited, divine sense of life. They've lost touch with that because they've lost touch with the side of themselves that can appreciate it. And so in losing touch, they find themselves trapped in a world without that understanding. It's a rather literal world, you know, where the punishment fits the crime, the kind of things for which hell is known of at a cursory, immediate approach. But again, that's not that. That's not. There's more than meets the eye, and there's more going to be going on in this. But sure enough, you know, Dante is wanting to take us through this initiation, through this opening up, and so the first thing that Dante the pilgrim sees, as opposed to Dante the poet, who knows more, the first thing that Dante the pilgrim sees is a hell as he would expect it. You know, there's wailing and gnashing of teeth, the suffering going on. Here is his first sight, as is described in the text. It says, "Here sighs and cries and shrieks of lamentation echo throughout the stairless hell, stairless air, sorry, echo throughout the starless air of hell. At first these sounds resounding made me weep, tongues confused, a language strained in anguish, with cadences of anger, shrill outcries and raucous groans that joined with sounds of hands raising a whirling storm that turns itself forever through that air of endless black, like grains of sand swirling when a whirlwind blows." So it's the kind of hell which you'd expect to see in a horror movie, or expect to see on a medieval doom painting. But notice that it makes Dante weep too. Now this weeping, which occurs to him throughout hell, is significant because it's a moment where the sight overwhelms him. It's similar to when he swoons, which he does. He's actually going to swoon at the end of the third canto. And I think, again, that's kind of key because it's part of the initiation. As it were, what he expects to see, what he does see, overwhelms him. And that sense of being overcome by things is part of, is the crucial first step, actually, to seeing more than just what you expect. You know, it's the moment when someone thinks they've reached all they can tolerate. You know, things can get no worse. But as Jung put it, that's the enantiodromia, that's the turning point. And so Dante's weeping, even as he first enters hell, is a sign that this is going to be a long process that's actually going to take him somewhere else. And it's signaled too because Virgil tells him that these are mysteries you're entering into. This, again, is not just a kind of straightforward judgment and then punishment kind of world. And this is a mystery where things are going to unfold. Now, sure enough, the first people that Dante sees in hell are, again, sort of getting the punishment that you might think they deserve. They're called the undecided. They're the people who, in life, couldn't decide whether they had faith or not, whether they were going to stand for the good or the bad. They just had kind of indifferent lives. They couldn't, you might say, even take the first step into life. They, in fact, in hell it's said that they not only couldn't say I've lived, they couldn't even say they've died. And it said, Virgil tells him, it said that they live at this outskirts of hell, right close to the threshold. And because if they've proceeded further, then those who at least had lived their life, if led it in sin, could at least look back at the undecided and say, well, at least we're not like them. So they had to be kind of held back from the dead in order not to provide the dead with any kind of consolation. Now, there are very, very many of the undecided. Dante is amazed at how many of the undecided dead there are already. He's hardly even got into hell yet, and there's many, many people here. And I think that's supposed to stress that the undecided just followed the kind of collective masses. They were hoi polloi that didn't really think about life for themselves, that didn't embrace their own intuition, and most importantly, didn't take their own freedom to live their life. And this is their kind of their desperate fate now, that because they didn't even take the first step, they're just kind of stranded in this undecided place. It's emphasized because of their so-called punishment, which I think really is more a repetition of where they find themselves ending up. They are surrounded, Dante notices, by flies, hornets and wasps that constantly sting them. They get stung so bad that they bleed, and the bleeding drips down their bodies and falls on the ground, where it turns into pus, and the pus is eaten by worms. First, one of the very, 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 very vivid images that you get in the Inferno. But this stinging, which of course makes them care, they're going to care about that in this random, hideous kind of way, is complemented by the fact they're also running very fast. And Dante notices that they're following someone carrying a banner. But it's a banner that, as it were, has got nowhere to stand. They don't know where they stand, so they've got to kind of keep moving. So they're trapped in this perpetual undecided state. Freud would say it's a repetition compulsion. That is, as it were, what happens when you don't embrace your freedom in life, that you just get stuck into the minutiae cares of the everyday, as it were, that sting you like a wasp, but at the same time being led without knowing your ground, without understanding where you stand, and by the banner that is never put down. So these are the first people that he meets in hell. It's a brilliant example of what's known as the contrapasso. So this is normally translated as the kind of appropriate punishment. There's more psychological insight in that, that it's then stressed it's not quite a punishment. It's more that this is all that the soul is capable of experiencing. If you like, this is the deepest thread that shaped their life, now amplified and made explicit in hell. So for the undecided, it's being both tormented by everyday niggles and bugs, but also just having to kind of keep moving with the masses. So that's the contrapasso, but I want to push it a bit further than that too, because I think what this is also beginning to indicate to us is that in hell, you see what you're capable of seeing. It's not that that hell is the place of your own making. I think that's too crude. It's more like hell is the place you see when you are a bit short-sighted. It's a kind of myopic vision of life. It's a kind of reflexive sense. Now, I think this is a really deep insight, because I think even in this life it's true that we see only what we're capable of seeing, and this is actually a rather modern understanding of perception. Immanuel Kant said that our minds are like pairs of glasses that we put on to bring things into focus, but of course they can only bring into focus that which they're tuned to see. Our minds can only see that which they're set up to see. And so often in life, the task with seeing more is to undo your expectations, to, as it were, refocus your mind so it can take in a bigger view. It can focus onto things which were out of sight or below the horizon before. And I think that this is being reflected, not in the Kantian sense, but is already beginning to shape what Dante sees in hell. You know, he sees at first in hell what he would expect to see. And then he also sees this sort of sense of justice, which he would sort of expect, which in first instance you might interpret as the punishment fitting the crime, but actually is something more subtle going on, already flagged up by the oddities that love and highest wisdom has shaped this place as well. Another thing I really like about the undecided is that they're a kind of haunted set of souls. And I don't know, this makes me think about what people report about hauntings now, or about people that have visitations from the newly dead. It's often said that people that die and then souls that hang around and haunt the people that carry on living are souls that haven't really quite realised they've died. They're souls that can't, as it were, leave this earthly life. There's something of this going on, I think, in this Canto 3 and Dante's Divine Comedy, that these are the souls too who can't even fully enter hell. They can't, as it were, leave life, and they're haunting Dante now and haunting themselves as well. Really interesting parallels and reflections going on. This was written 700 years ago by Dante, and yet still gives us some sort of understanding perhaps of what even goes on from strange experiences that happen in this life. And the souls that haunt are the souls that can't leave this life. And so an exorcism, for example, often is trying to tell the soul and to go where it should be now, to give it permission, to give it the kind of will to help it decide to do that. Dante looks at all these souls, and another thing happens for the first time, which is going to happen many, many times through hell. He recognises one of the souls. Now, this is a massive theme. First of all, it signals that, you know, we are recognisable souls in the afterlife. It is something about our individuality that situates us where we're going to be in the next life, Dante is presuming. It's part of our freedom, part of our will. It matters now what we decide that's going to affect what we can experience in the next life. And so, as it were, where we'll end up, what we have the capacity to see. Dante doesn't tell us who it is that he recognises. He says it's the one who made the great refusal. Now, that in itself echoes something of Dante's current state. If he knows one thing as he's on the threshold of hell, he knows that he hasn't refused to enter hell. You'll remember that in the first two cantos, he didn't know what to do, was fearful, seemed to find some courage from somewhere, then his courage left him, until finally he realised that he had Beatrice's blessing, who'd sent Virgil, who was going to be his guide, and he managed to find enough courage to overcome his cowardice and so step into hell. So he knows that he hasn't made the great refusal. He is stepping out at least the first step of this journey. Quite who the soul is that he sees who has made the great refusal is hotly debated. I suspect the option that people go for that's right is probably Pontius Pilate, because Pilate famously in the Christian story refuses to decide himself who Jesus was, and hands that decision over to the crowds, to the hoi polloi. So he's now part of the hoi polloi in having to run through these early stages of hell, stung by the bugs. But there's something about Dante seeing that, because again, it reflects his state of mind. If he knows one thing, you might say, it's that he hasn't made a refusal to enter hell. So sure enough, the thing which he sees, which he can focus on, and the soul that he spots, is one who made a great refusal. That aspect of our consciousness has been stressed again. After contemplating the undecided, Dante looks up and sees another crowd, and the second group that he encounters in hell. And then he notices that this is a great group queuing to get across the river Acheron, which is the river that encircles the underworld, and both in Virgil's understanding and now in Dante's too. And there's the boatman, the boatman Charon, who is going to take people across. He's a terrifying devil figure. He does something as well for the first time in the Inferno, which is notice that Dante is still one of the souls of the living, not one of the dead. And he's outraged that Dante should be approaching him. He makes actually this strange prophecy. He says, you must enter the afterlife by another port and cross another river on another boat. This actually is a prophecy not understood at the time. Prophecies nothing's really understood properly in hell. Strange utterances and oracles are often said, and they just kind of float away. No one really understands them. Another really important aspect of what life in hell is like, just with this strange numinous sense that something's been said, but it not being able to be absorbed into your sight. The reader, Dante the poet, knows that actually it's the prophecy that Dante the pilgrim will enter purgatory across the river Tiber with the angel who takes the souls who are going to go into purgatory that way. But we don't know that yet. And instead, Dante just sees the souls queuing eagerly to cross the river and enter into hell. Another odd thing, though, that he notices as they move through this crowd is that the souls are eager now. They're both eager to embrace their fate and eager to move further into hell. And this is a strange thing. You know, what's this about? It's not quite explained. Virgil says it's got something to do with God's justice. I just wonder whether, even in this now sort of increasingly dire place, there's flickers of love, faith, hope, still alive in people unconsciously. They don't know that. They feel at one level that every hope has been abandoned for them. And yet in their eagerness to kind of move around, to try and move into hell, there's something about in that perverse desire to go into the descent, into the darkness, and they're still carrying something of a vague sort of promise that they've now lost touch with. Dante feels that he's learnt his first great lesson in hell, and enthusiastically says, you know, I saw, I understood, and so I spoke to Virgil of what I now kind of got. But Virgil chastises him. Virgil says, okay, you know, you have seen something. Seeing is the first key part of understanding, another great theme that's beginning to settle down. But you've spoken too soon. You haven't really understood. This is a place of mysteries. This is a place of initiation, I would, as I'm putting it. And he sort of tells Dante off, and Dante realises that he's spoken too soon. He's, as it were, tried to grab onto his understanding to help him settle in this place. But you don't want to settle in this place, Virgil implies. And so Dante kind of bows his head and feels full of shame. And then the reality of the place they're in overwhelms him once more in its immediacy. Let me just read a few more lines about these souls. Those souls there, naked in despair, changed colour and their teeth began to chatter at the sound of this announcement of their doom. They were cursing God, cursing their own parents, the human race, the time, the place, the seed of their beginning and the day of their birth. They were weeping bitterly and packed themselves along the wicked shore that awaits every person who fears God. Dante is taken back into the immediacy of the place, and this is what he's got to experience fully if he is to make next steps. And surely once again it kind of overwhelms him. He swoons this time rather than weeps, and the canto ends with him feeling the desperation of the place, which is the most important thing he must experience here in Canto 3.